Funding for Think comes from SMU Master of Liberal Studies programs.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. And the Oscar goes to, who will it be this year? In this era when live TV is starting to seem like a quaint 20th century tradition, there is still palpable excitement leading up to the Academy Awards, which generate a level of pre-event buzz to rival the Super Bowl and maybe election night. So in advance of the cinema industry's biggest annual celebration of itself, we like to get perspective from experts who have seen the most likely contenders and who have covered enough Academy Awards to be pretty good at predicting the results. Julie Fisk is a member of the Dallas-Fort Worth Film Critics Association. Chris Wagner is pop culture critic for the Dallas Morning News and co-host of KERA's Big Screen segments, which air on Thursdays during Morning Edition. Stephen Becker is the other half of the Big Screen duo, and in the time he has left over, he is producer of The Think Show. Welcome all of you to Think.
Thanks for having us.
And Julie, first time here. So glad to have you.
I am so honored to be here. Thank you so much for inviting me, guys.
You bet.
Well, Best Picture has only 8 nominees this year. There could have been 10. Were there any films that you might have added to fill those last spots?
Guardians of the Galaxy. I'm only halfway kidding. I think that movie was fantastic. It was so much fun.
A lot of people said Interstellar should have at least seen a nod.
I wasn't a big Interstellar fan, but I could see why people would say that because it has this grand scale to it, and it's almost too big to not acknowledge in some way, and it is nominated in some of the down-the-line categories. But for me, it ultimately didn't quite gel and come together, and I think for a lot of other people, and I would include myself in this category, it was like pretty confusing too, and pretty far out there, both literally and figuratively. And I think just with enough voters, it just was way over their heads and they kind of tuned out.
I was a big fan of A Most Violent Year, but it was a very poorly marketed film. And let's be honest, that is at least half of what we're talking about here. We're talking about how well studios position their movies and how well marketed they are, what kind of marketing budget they have. So just to like knock away the illusion that this is about quality entirely.
Well, thanks for
somehow,
killing it for everybody,
Wagner. Or at least mostly. But yeah, I loved A Most Violent Year.
I don't think that people realize how much campaigning goes into an Oscar season. Like, everybody thinks that it's just about what movie do you feel deserved it most, and that's really not the case. There is campaigning. There's so much going on. And you're right, A Most Violent Year is fantastic, and Jessica Chastain is excellent in that movie. But it came out late. It was so quiet. They barely beat the drum whenever that movie was released, much less beforehand. So I'm not surprised that it's not on the list either.
I think that's one of those ones where maybe they overthought the marketing thing. I think they thought, we're going to save this for the very end. That's what they did with Zero Dark 30 a few years ago. We're going to save this to the very end, and people are going to be hearing about this movie, and we're going to lay it on them, and they're going to love it. But what happened to them is people already had their minds made up about what the kind of realistic Best Picture nominees would be, and I think it got kind of left out in the cold.
Well, that, and then all the controversy kicked in about Zero Dark 30. It was like, well, is this a true story or not?
Oh, yeah, with Zero Dark 30, yeah, that was for sure.
Right.
But I think the same thing with The Most Violent Year, you know, people kind of just came and went.
Well, are y'all a little disappointed that there aren't any big blockbusters or like popular types of movies that are listed this year? I feel like regular people don't feel like they have a horse in this race, so they're not as interested.
So too intellectual, is that what you're saying?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
American Sniper is the big one. I mean, American Sniper made more money than all the rest of the movies, all the rest of the nominees combined. I like it when a big blockbuster movie is good enough, I think, in my humble opinion, to be a nominee. Straining to come up with something this last year that fits that category for me.
I thought American Sniper was a worthy nominee. It tells it puts a real personal face on PTSD. I know there's been there's been a backlash over the way maybe it glorifies war or the wars that we've been involved in. But
which is nonsense, I should say.
Yeah, but I think if you just look at it as this one person's story of dealing with how you never can. To me, Bradley Cooper's performance was all about how when he was home, his mind was over there. When he was over there, his mind was kind of half home, and you never could sync up his body and mind in the same place. And I just thought that that was probably representative of what a lot of combat veterans face.
This is his third year in a row to be nominated. And I did think he was very, very good in the film, but there's all this backlash, and then there is the sort of complicating nature of the fact that the trial is ongoing. I think voting for the Academy Awards only closed like 2 or 3 days ago, right?
Right.
How much is that and the controversy over whether the story really tracks with reality? How much does that affect the film's prospects?
The controversy might affect it some. It certainly did with Zero Dark Thirty. And it's really gotten, I think it's gotten kind of despicable the way these controversies are created.
Like politics.
Yeah, that's very, it is politics. It's not like politics. It is politics. It's politics and marketing. That's what the Oscars are. I think it hurts somewhat. I think Bradley Cooper was responsible for pretty much everything good in that movie, and I thought it was a good movie too, and I think that speaks to how strong his performance is. All of the nuance and subtlety and ambiguity in that film comes from him.
So could this be his year?
I don't think so. I would kind of like to see him. In fact, I think I picked him as my should win this Sunday. I think Eddie Redmayne's going to win for A Theory of Everything, and if he doesn't, I think Michael Keaton will win for Birdman.
What do you think, Julie?
I think it's definitely Michael Keaton. I think it's kind of sad that Steve Carell hasn't gotten more acclaim for what he did with Foxcatcher. Because when you think about the fact that it's Steve Carell, he could have made that almost laughable. That role, that was tenuous. And what he did, it was awesome. He was terrifying in that movie. He was seriously creepy. So, I mean, and I don't suspect that he's going to win. I think Michael Keaton's going to get it. And I feel like Eddie Redmayne, he's so, so wonderful. But I think Keaton will get it. But I just feel bad that Steve Carell never gets mentioned in these conversations.
Michael Keaton certainly falls into that guy who's been doing it for a long time, who finally has this, you know, strangely breakthrough, you know, late or at least mid-career, mm-hmm. mid to late career. He seems like a guy who's generally liked, you know, he's made some money for a lot of people. And so you never know how the voters are going to look at that sort of thing. I think I think the guy who had the biggest trick to pull off was Eddie Redmayne playing Stephen Hawking as ALS, you know, degenerates his body. The incredible thing about that performance was that just having to keep in your mind straight, okay, if I decide that my left foot doesn't work in this scene, well, you know what? I can't be using it correctly in the scene after that. And they didn't even shoot that film chronologically. So imagine keeping all that in your head while, oh, by the way, you're still trying to act. And on top of that, you know, your physical performance is so much of a way that an actor is able to tell their story. And just to have all of that taken away slowly, that's just quite the trick. And I would be very happy if he did win.
Do you guys, did anybody see Jupiter Ascending? That's Eddie Redmayne's most recent movie.
It's the movie that might norbit him.
Yes, because he's terrible at it. He has this weird shriek thing that he does.
Is it the role or is it his part?
It's the role and how he pulls it off. Mm-hmm. But it's awful, and I wonder, would that affect his chances?
Let's say everybody, I use the norbit as a verb because Eddie Murphy was nominated for Dreamgirls, and he was in Norbit, which is a fairly offensive and not very good movie right around the time the Oscar votes were being tabulated, and some people think Norbit wounded his Dreamgirls Oscar chances.
And he began that year as a favorite, if I remember right, so...
Are there any instructions given when those ballots are sent out about you're supposed to be considering only this performance? Because it's pretty clear people don't. Either they're looking at someone's body of work and saying this person finally deserves an award, or they get norbited.
I think even if there are instructions, these are people voting who are not used to taking instructions or are going to still vote the way that they think that the thing should play out.
Okay, so what do you think accounts for the fact that Selma can be up for Best Picture but have no nominations for acting or directing?
I think this is part of that manufactured controversy problem that I referred to before. I think some of the LBJ controversy hurt it somewhat.
People who say that LBJ was portrayed unfairly.
Correct. And I will also say I think Selma was also a pretty poorly marketed movie. The screeners were sent out late. These things should not matter, but they do. So I think it's a combination of not quite knowing how to market it, and then this sort of white noise of, oh, did they do LBJ wrong sort of thing. I think David Oyelowo certainly should have been nominated for his performance as Martin Luther King. Also very good in A Most Violent Year, by the way.
I read in Variety that Oscar voters are 94% white, 77% male, and 86% over 50.
So there's that, too.
Yeah.
which is why you have a year in which the field of actors and directors is as lily white as you could possibly be, because it's 100%.
But that said, the first thing, if you mention that to the Oscar voters, they'll say 12 Years a Slave, remember last year. So they pride themselves on being liberal, but what, safe liberal.
Like they got that out of the way for last year?
right.
But it's like, do you vote based on color, or do you vote based on the movie you like? That's kind of a tough call.
We've never had a female of color director, I believe, nominated, much less win. And this was a perfect opportunity to have someone very deserving with Ava DuVernay this year. I think it's a travesty that she didn't get nominated, but I do think that she is taking a lot of the brunt of that criticism, which, if you think the criticism is fair, she was certainly at the center of piecing the movie together and telling the story. And I think the flip side of that is that she's taken the brunt of the people who have called into question some of the ideas in the movie.
What about her directing really appealed to you in that movie? Like, what was it that made it? It's a movie of merit because of the subject matter, but what was it about the directing that really struck you?
You know, there's an old movie cliche. I can't remember who said it, but that, you know, a great film is three good scenes and no bad ones, or three great scenes and no bad ones. And that's kind of like Selma, in that there's a couple of just super affecting, memorable scenes. The first time that the protesters try and cross the bridge and they're beaten back by the people on the other side of the state line, she does this thing where she slows down the action just slightly, but enough to where when you see somebody reach back that hand and smack one of those protesters, man, you feel it more than if it were all playing out at normal speed. So just some technique things like that that were really smart and really made it much more effective. And it's a shame that she's not being recognized for those things.
I do have to say, though, I'm proud of her for following her heart. I mean, when the movie came out, there was pretty much a period of kind of racial unrest going on. And she didn't hold back. And the actors in the movie, like, they went, they did protests. They wore their I Can't Breathe T-shirts. They spoke out. And some people feel that that worked against them and in the campaign that they were being too political. But there comes a point in time, do you want to win an Oscar or do you want to fight your fight? And she continued to fight her fight. And I respect her for that.
Can I say one more quick thing about Selma, which mm-hmm. is that I see absolutely no reason why they can't tell the sequel to this story. I mean, there's three more years of MLK's life. You have the guy who was born to play MLK on the screen. You have a team that's clearly interested in that story. I'd love it if they told the rest of that story. Now, it's kind of complicated because Sony owns the intellectual property rights to MLK. And if you're going to tell the rest of that story, you know, you can't do it without his famous speeches. So, but if they could work that out, I'd love it if they would tell the next chapter.
Well, Taylor Branch wrote 700-800-page books about this subject, about civil rights during the King years. So there is plenty of material there.
Clint Eastwood was also not nominated for directing American Sniper. Why not?
It's not to my mind, it's not a great job of directing, but I'm not sure if that's why he wasn't nominated. He may not have been nominated because he's a pretty outspoken conservative. I mean, these are things that I think Oscar voters think about. Again, they shouldn't be, but so much goes into people's personal preferences for what they want to vote for. I don't think it's a particularly well-directed movie, so I'm not all that upset that he wasn't nominated. But again, I don't know if the quality or lack thereof is the reason.
Do you think Babygate killed it?
Oh, no, I don't think the fake baby mini controversy. Even that was a controversy. It's gotten to the point where everything is a controversy.
One quick thing about Eastwood, I think sometimes with people who have been around for a while, they're held up to the best work they've ever done. And American Sniper is a solid film, but it's not as good as some of his previous ones.
We're speaking this hour about the 2015 Oscars with Stephen Becker of KERA's Big Screen segment, Chris Wagner, who is co-host of that segment and also pop culture critic for the Dallas Morning News, and Julie Fisk, who is with the Dallas-Fort Worth Film Critics Association. If you'd like to join us, you can call 1-800-933-5372. We'll be back in 2 minutes.
Thank you.
Funding for Think comes from SMU Master of Liberal Studies programs, accepting applications for summer and fall to design your own Master of Liberal Studies degree at SMU with concentrations in human rights, creative writing, and organizational dynamics. More at smu.edu/MLS.
I'm willing to meet my creator and answer for every shot that I took. The thing that haunts me are all the guys that I couldn't save.
It is unacceptable that they use their power to keep us voiceless. Those that have gone before us say no more.
He has pneumonia. The only way he will survive would be to give him a tracheotomy. He will never speak again.
Yes, he will.
My name is Stephen Hawking.
It has been a great joy to watch this man defy every expectation, both scientific and personal.
There should be no boundary to human endeavor. However bad life may seem, while there is life, there is hope.
You're listening to Think. You just heard a little montage of some Oscar-nominated films. First American Sniper, then Selma, then The Theory of Everything. We're talking about the 2015 Academy Awards with Dallas Morning News culture critic Chris Wagner, who is co-host along with our Stephen Becker of KERA's Big Screen segment. Julie Fisk is here as well from the Dallas-Fort Worth Film Critics Association. If you'd like to join us, you can call 1-800-933-5372 or email think@kera.org. Okay, let's talk about Birdman. I didn't know that much about it, even though it had been everywhere before I walked in, and I just thought it was unlike anything else I'd ever seen.
It's funny you mentioned that you didn't know much about it, because I had already heard that, oh, this is amazing. You know, the festival screenings, everybody was just raving about it, and it left me very cold. I've seen,
really?
I watched it twice. I actually went back to look at it. I was like, maybe I missed something, and it just didn't really speak to me in any sort. I was impressed by the technique, and I also thought it was very impressed by the technique.
That's a good point, yeah.
It
certainly calls attention to itself.
It just seemed really, really pleased with itself. And I enjoyed parts of it, but at the end of the day, I was just kind of like, huh, that's a pretty good movie, and went on to the next one.
I'm happy to hear you say that, because I always kept wondering what I was missing, because I enjoyed it. I thought it was very impressive what they were doing, but I never got why everyone loved it so much. In my mind, it was almost more like an industry picture, where I could understand people in theater or in film, how they would really love it because they already know these characters and these scenes. But yeah, I felt very... sorry, Chris. I'm glad you liked it, though.
That's okay.
Hey, I loved it, so I'm there with you.
High five.
I think it's a movie that had a lot on its mind. It had a lot of topics to explore. Talked about the relative merits of film versus theater, which I quite enjoyed. I liked the magical realism that was involved in it. And I also liked this kind of question about why we have a drive to be relevant. That was really Michael Keaton plays this actor who was a big shot Hollywood star, and now he's trying to kind of reclaim his worthwhileness by producing and acting in a Broadway play. What all actors do, right? Whenever they're washed up in Hollywood, they go do a play, and it makes them seem legit. And the story, of course, takes place all in and around and behind the scenes in this Broadway theater. It's actually the St. James Theater on Broadway. And I just love the combination of the story it was telling and the technique that it used. It feels like it's just one continuous shot. And one of the things we talk about, Chris and I and Julie, and you know, when we're hanging out after screenings, is we just want to see something that we hadn't seen before. Mm-hmm. And that felt to me like something I hadn't seen before.
Whereas Boyhood felt that way to me.
It's not just an either or, you know. I mean, they both felt that way to me. I will say, if we would have been having this conversation a month ago, and I know we're going to talk about Boyhood in a second, I would have said, there's your Best Picture winner. I think it's going to be Birdman now. And the reason I say that is that if you read the tea leaves, it won the top honors from the Producers Guild. It won the top honors from the Directors Guild. A lot of those people are also Oscar voters, and there's no real reason to think that they would just vote for one way and change their minds for their Oscar ballot. So I think Birdman's going to end up winning.
Do you realize if Michael Keaton wins for Best Actor, he will be the third Batman to win an Oscar, leaving only, or modern day Batman, leaving only Val Kilmer. So he needs to get busy on
and
that.
Adam West.
And well, yes.
He'll also be the second oldest Best Actor winner. Which
wow,
is,
that's
which
something.
Is that right?
Which
what,
is
he's
really
only, what,
strange.
Mid 60s?
He's 65.
Wow.
So I don't remember who the oldest is.
Huh. That's very interesting. Okay, so let's talk about Boyhood, because this is the film that I could appreciate what it was trying to do. I thought it was amazing to sort of watch the characters change over time. The story itself didn't, like, I looked at my watch a lot in that last 90 minutes of the film. And I felt like maybe it could have used some really good editing to feel more compelling to me.
Yeah, it hit me on a very emotional level, and I was immersed in the full-on telling of what is admittedly a fairly loose story. But I think that's kind of what Linklater does. He creates these very immersive experiences and lets people talk. He loves the gift of gab. I mean, that's what those Before Sunrise movies are all about. So for me, it had both the emotional impact, and I think it's hit a lot of guys that way. But although I think Patricia Arquette is the emotional heart of that movie, and I think she's going to win. But it also met that standard that Stephen referred to. It did something. I have never seen a movie show the process of time passage in quite that way. And to me, that is new. That is something that is very novel, and I award points for that. So yeah, I am a fan. I hope it's going to win. I think Birdman is going to win.
I did wonder, watching Boyhood, if Terrence Malick was like, why did I not think of that?
Yeah, he and Linklater are probably neighbors.
Yeah.
To me, Boyhood was almost like a social experiment, because it is. It's long, and there are sometimes moments where you don't even really like the main character very much. I kept wondering, why is he so skinny? What's going on with this kid? But it's almost this study in the more time you spend with someone, and when you watch them grow up, you have an emotional connection to them, even if you don't love them that much. Because when the little boy's voice changed, I teared up. Mm-hmm. I was very emotional about that movie. And the scenes of Texas, we had just come back from a big trip to Alpine. So when he ended up going to school down there, I was weeping in those last final scenes of the movie. But I agree, it was slow. It was kind of loosey-goosey halfway through, but there was still something about it that felt so real to me. It just really pulled me in. I think it's going to win Best Picture.
You know, the more I think about it, not only do I think it was the best movie I saw this year, I think in our, what are we, halfway through the decade now? I think it's the best thing I've seen probably in the teens or whatever we're
calling
this current decade.
Steve Becker up in the ante.
Look at that.
I agree. Yeah, which will guarantee that we'll not win Best Picture now. But,
well, there you go. You're the jinx.
I do believe that, it was long and it was loose. And I think that was part of the beauty of it, because it allowed itself time to breathe. And what it really showed you is, you could have lined up all these signature moments in a young man's life, the getting your driver's license and the first date and all that stuff. And what it really showed is that life happens around those big moments. But you need to give it a little time for those things to happen. Otherwise, it just feels like we're ticking off a series of events along the calendar. This movie did a great job of that. And I think I agree with Chris. I mean, Patricia Arquette, it's funny, in a movie called Boyhood, the most memorable performance is clearly Patricia Arquette. And I just can always see her in her apartment when she's packing up her son to go
I
to
agree.
College.
That scene, yeah.
And she says, I just thought there would be more.
That's what mm-hmm. that's
it
what won
your
her
heart
that's what won
time.
Her the Oscar mm-hmm. too, and it's so well deserved.
Yeah.
You have to recognize a woman in Hollywood going ahead and saying, okay, I'm gonna spend the next 12 years without getting any sort of cosmetic surgery, no Botox. I'm going to go all natural. Mm-hmm. And that's what she did. I mean, that's a huge commitment for a woman in Hollywood. Good for her. She deserves that Oscar.
And it also got her a new TV series. So
yeah.
I think she's on NBC now.
I was struck by the fact that all but one of the women nominated for Best Actress are nominated for films that are not in the top category. And the exact mm-hmm. opposite is true for the men. The only one who's in a film that is not nominated is Steve Carell in Foxcatcher.
It's funny that my lead acting choices, the people I think are going to win, Eddie Redmayne and Julianne Moore for Still Alice. I don't think either of those movies are particularly good. I just think they're real standout performances. So they don't always match up somehow. I think with Julianne Moore, that's going to be, I think she's done better work, but I think this is good enough for her to win it. And I know
Seriously?
there's always a lifetime achievement element for these things. I mean, Al Pacino did not deserve really to win for Scent of a Woman, but he probably should have won for Dog Day Afternoon or one of the Godfather movies, Paul Newman, Color of Money. But I thought she was really good in Still Alice. I think she's one of the great actresses. I'd be happy to see her win.
I think it's so interesting that, let's just say, Julianne Moore and Eddie Redmayne win. It's two performances that basically demonstrate a degenerative disease. And I think that's something that a lot of viewers can, even if you haven't had those diseases, you can imagine, what would that be like if I couldn't walk, if I couldn't use my hands? What would that be like if all of a sudden I could not remember everything that I've ever known in my life? That's stuff that's just very base level emotions that anyone can connect with. And I think that's why people have connected with those performances.
I feel like Still Alice is almost like a horror movie. When I mean, you can't watch Still Alice and then not have a senior moment in the following week and not freak out.
Right.
And you immediately think you have Alzheimer's.
And so, and again, just pairing those two things together, it's this real interesting conversation of like, well, would I rather lose all my physical capabilities and still have my mental intact, or the other way around? It's just an interesting companion pieces.
Certainly the Academy has been known for rewarding those kinds of performances, too, where people are dealing with like physiological and mental challenges.
Absolutely. Yeah. Going back a long, long way.
Well, it's interesting. You look at all the best actor for the men. It's like there's all these transformations. Eddie Redmayne completely transformed. Bradley Cooper, completely different guy. Same thing with Steve Carell. And then Michael Keaton, he's like the only one who didn't go through, but I guess he does in some ways in the movie. There's a bit of a transformation, but every single one of them.
You know, in this funny way, it's been so long since we've seen Michael Keaton in a movie. It feels like he's gone through a transformation,
right?
Because he doesn't look like the young man that a lot of us remember him from 15 years ago, let's say.
Well, he does turn into a bird.
There is that.
There is that.
Spoiler alert. A magical bird. 1-800-933-5372 is our number. Let's speak with Charles in Arlington. Hey, Charles.
Hello.
Hi. Go right ahead, please.
No, I was just like to say, when I talked to the lady earlier on the phone about making the comment, Richard Dreyfuss once said when he won his Oscar, and he even beat out Richard Burton, who everyone said he deserved it more than Richard did. But he was saying that if you're at the right time and place in Hollywood during the Oscar period, well, he says the Oscars are a popularity contest. Mm-hmm. It's mainly with who you know in the industry and what friends you have that are casting the votes. They'll cast a vote for someone who they're more inclined to favor personally than they would as far as their performance on the screen.
Yeah, I think that's certainly a big part of the equation. These are human beings voting for other human beings. You're going to vote, might vote for your friend. You might vote for that guy who was really nice to you and you made that movie 15 years ago. There's so many different variables, and popularity is absolutely one of them.
Well, and then you have people like Joaquin Phoenix who flat out are like, this is ridiculous. Mm-hmm. And then he never gets nominated. And he's done some pretty incredible work, but he probably won't get nominated.
Is there value to these things? Because I, you know, sort of enjoy finding out which performances are nominated and which directors. On the other hand, there is something about it that is like the whole night is so self-congratulatory, right? And we all love movies and everything, but it's amazing how willing the motion picture industry is to say, my God, we are important.
We're so awesome.
Well, okay, so this is an industry full of people who got into the creative field where you are most applauded naturally, then making an award show to be even, it's never enough.
Hollywood loves itself some Hollywood.
The thing that I still like about the Oscars, though, is it's the one kind of awards show that you can have kind of, if you want to view all the Best Picture winners, like, you can totally do that in a way that it's really hard to, like, listen to every nominated Grammy album or see every Tony nominated performance, things like that. It's the one award show that we still have a little bit of a universal feel to.
And there's always that moment. I was just watching Halle Berry's acceptance speech for Monster. And just that one moment of real, where they're not an actor anymore and they're just someone losing it on stage because they won. And she's bawling and she can't get her words together. I don't know how old that is, but I was watching it on my sofa the other night crying again. So there are those moments that are so perfect, and you get to share in it because you love these people in spite of yourself.
And then she had to get kissed by Adrian Brody the next year in front of millions and millions of people.
You know, that being said, I think it's nothing cooler than like when Morgan Freeman won his Oscar. He just kind of walked out and was like, thanks, this is pretty cool. See you guys around. Like, this is not the defining thing in my life, getting voted by a bunch of you guys.
That's what Joe Pesci did, too, I think, for Goodfellas. He got up and said something to the effect of, you know, the pleasure is mine, or thank you. I don't remember exactly what he said, but he was up there for 5 seconds.
I also really like it when George Clooney won his acting Oscar, whether or not you agree with his politics or not. And there's some people who would certainly say, this isn't the time or place. But if you've got a message to deliver and you got 75 million people watching, like, I'd rather hear that than you thanking, you know, the third-level management team at IMG or whatever. Right. Like, let's hear, you know, make the most of your minute up there at the podium. I don't have a problem with that.
Wes Anderson has been to the Oscars a number of times. He has never won, right, in any category?
I don't believe so,
and I think that's going to change this year.
Best screenplay?
I think he's going to win best screenplay.
Not best director.
I think that was a, you know, it's a pleasure to be nominated kind of thing. And I think he was deserving to be nominated. But the Grand Budapest Hotel, I believe, tied for the most number of nominations with 9.
Correct.
It's got to win something. And I think screenplay would be, it's a high enough award where it's like, well, they didn't just win for, you know, costumes. You know, it's a very respectful award. And it's a way of saying, hey, we really appreciate you writing this. We're not going to give you director, but we'll give you this other one.
Well, the cinematography in that was really amazing. And, Wes Anderson is great because, like, the more money he gets and the more people trust him to just do whatever he wants, the more Wes Anderson his films become, you know?
It's a gorgeous film. Yeah, and I think he's going to win, too, by the way. I think he'll win Best Original Screenplay, and I think it'll be well-deserved.
And I think I might not have said that before last year, but a equally quirky, weird movie, Her, won Best Original Screenplay for Spike Jonze.
I loved that movie.
I did, too. And so I think the table set for kind of more unusual movies to take that.
I kind of thought that Ralph Fiennes might get nominated because he's so great.
Yeah, he was. He was fantastic.
He's the center of that movie for sure. And I've had no problem. You know, it's the classic Hollywood never nominates comedians. With it, you know, for the most part, they don't nominate comedic performances.
Unless they put on a fake nose and have a tragic wrestling coach story.
Who knew that Willem Dafoe could be funny, by the way?
Yeah.
He's never funny to me. He's always terrifying. Always. He threw the cat out.
Well, he's funny in a terrifying way in this movie.
We're speaking this hour about the 2015 Academy Awards with three experts in film. Julie Fisk of the Dallas-Fort Worth Film Critics Association, Chris Wagner of the Dallas Morning News and KERA's Big Screen segment, and Stephen Becker of the KERA Big Screen segment and producer of this show. We'll resume the conversation in a couple of minutes. You can email think@kera.org or call us at 1-800-933-5372.
Funding for Think comes from SMU Master of Liberal Studies programs. Accepting applications for summer and fall to design your own Master of Liberal Studies degree at SMU with concentrations in human rights, creative writing, and organizational dynamics. More at smu.edu/MLS.
What's your name?
Andrew Naaman, sir.
What year are you?
I'm a first year.
You know who I am?
Yes, sir.
So you know I'm looking for players?
Yes, sir.
Then why did you stop playing?
Who are you?
I'm Zero, sir. The new lobby boy.
Zero, you say?
Yes, sir.
Well, I've never heard of you, never laid eyes on you. Who hired you? You're now going to be officially interviewed.
Should I go and light the candle first, sir?
What? No.
Dad, these questions are kind of hard to answer.
What is so hard to answer? About what sculpture are you making?
It's abstract.
Okay, that's good.
But, Dad, I mean, why is it all on us, though? You know, what about you? How was your week? You know, who do you hang out with? Do you have a girlfriend? What have you been up to? You're trying to build your universal machine. I read your paper at university. You theorized a machine that could solve any problem. Is that your idea behind Christopher?
Well, human brains can compute large sums very quickly. Even Hugh can do that, but I want Christopher to be smarter. To make a calculation and then to determine what to do next. Electrical brain. A digital computer.
It is Think's 2015 Academy Awards preview. I'm Chris Boyd here with Stephen Becker, Chris Wagner, and Julie Fisk. You can join our conversation at 1-800-933-5372. You just heard Whiplash, followed by Grand Budapest Hotel, Boyhood, and The Imitation Game. And before we go further, let's talk about where you guys watch the Academy Awards.
Yes, it's plug-ola time.
It's plug-ola time.
For the watching parties. I will be hosting a movie awards watching party. It's not called an Oscar watching party because it can't be, but
there's like a big thing.
There will be a large screen at the Texas Theater, and the Oscars will be on that big screen.
That's all you're saying.
Exactly. And I will be there giving away some stuff and making bad jokes and commenting on the Oscars as I furiously write my story on Deadline during commercial breaks.
What about you, Julie?
I'm going to be co-hosting one at the Angelica in Dallas with Mark Walters. So same situation. We'll be watching the awards ceremony, not the Super Bowl. We'll be watching the awards ceremony, and we're going to have some prizes to give away, some free food. It is totally free, but it's just first come, first serve, and we're going to get all dressed up and be fancy. So again, you can get all the details at angelicafilmcenter.com.
And, Stephen, I guess you're allowed to call it an Oscar party because it's you and your wife on the couch,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I'll be all comfortable and thinking, man, those suckers are out there all dressed up, and I'm laying on my couch watching this. And right when it's over at probably 10 past midnight, I could turn it off, and that'll be it.
I think the Super Bowl actually has something where if your screen is big enough, you can't call it a Super Bowl party even if it's at your house.
Really?
I have heard that.
Oh, my gosh.
So bizarre.
So I'm, to be honest, not a fan of awards shows. I like to go the next morning and look in the paper and see who won. But I am happy to hear that Neil Patrick Harris is hosting because I just think he's phenomenal.
He's awesome. Can I tell a story? Because
yes.
I know him from a million years ago. I used to do a night show in Albuquerque, New Mexico, and he was living out there. And he used to listen to my show, and he would call in and talk to me. And we were kind of friends. I'd see him out. He's a super nice guy. These were the lean years. This was before the even Harold and Kumar movies for Neil Patrick Harris. And we'd see each other out at bars. And he would quote back like jokes that I had made on the air. And all my friends were saying, when are you going to date Neil Patrick Harris? And I was, well, I'll certainly try. I'll do every. And I was always wondering.
You don't have to feel bad that didn't work out.
I know, finally. But
yeah, how's that going?
Not very well.
He's happily married. And you're happily
children.
Married.
And yes, yes.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go to Maria in Dallas. Hi, Maria.
Hello. What a nice chance to speak. I am so disappointed that nobody is talking about Benedict Cumberbatch. Oh. If you want to talk about real people of the five nominees for male, he is one of them. A real person, Alan Turing, mm-hmm. who actually helped break the Enigma Code, totally written out of history, and actually hounded to his own suicide. I have seen the film twice. I think it is totally heartbreaking. And I think, once again, we gay people are totally ignored.
You think that's the reason why, Maria?
That is my feeling, yes. I've polled it among my friends, and we all agree.
I so appreciate the call. What did you guys think about Imitation Game?
I liked it a lot. It's not going to win. He's not going to win. I think it will win Best Adapted Screenplay. I am a big fan of the Cumberbatch. As I like to call him. I'll be honest, I enjoyed his performance more than I enjoyed Eddie Redmayne's performance. I just think he's so quick and so constantly alert. And I like him in pretty much everything, including this. And I like the film quite a bit as well.
And he's recently married, too. So congratulations to Benedict Cumberbatch.
I liked the film okay in a way. I wanted more from it. I wanted to hear more about the strategy once they developed this, you know, computer and could basically predict what was going to happen in the war. Then the story takes on a whole other curve of how do you deploy this stuff, and how much loss of life is enough that you can justify, and then how much is something big enough where we've got to use our advanced technology. I wanted a little more of that part of the story, but he's certainly good in it, and I mean, you don't have to worry about him going anywhere, because I promise you he's probably getting all of the big scripts these days. So I think he will be back in this field probably not too long from now.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. We have Karen on the line in McKinney. Hey, Karen.
Hello. I have a quick question about The Homesman. I'm not sure if I'm the only person in Dallas who saw it, but I really, really enjoyed it. I'm a lay person. I don't know anything about film, but I would like some feedback from the panel regarding that movie.
Thanks for your call. Have you all seen it?
I think five other people in Dallas did see it. Actually,
are any of them in this room?
I'm not one of them.
I am not
none of them are in this room. I hear Hilary Swank is fantastic, and she actually had some early buzz for Best Actress, but that field was really, really packed this year. So it is sitting on my coffee table at this moment, Tommy Lee Jones and Hilary Swank and what is supposed to be a very odd Western, which sounds like my kind of thing.
We have an email from Mark who wants to know what you think about the best animated feature film this year. Mark says, this is a stepchild award. I noticed the critic in The New Yorker made his picks for each category, but for animated feature admitted he had not seen any of them. So he picked one based on the trailer. Well, at least he gave full disclosure.
Honest.
Goodness. I think it's an important category these days.
Absolutely.
Yeah, this is the one I've made this point before that sticks in my craw, because I cannot believe that the Lego movie did not get nominated in this field. That was in my top five movies that I saw this year. It was just a 90-minute long smile, is like I like to tell people. So that being said, back off the high horse. I think that this is going to be Big Hero 6's year to win, which was a very good film too. And it made a lot of money and did very well. There's some of the other ones in there that I have not seen. How to Train Your Dragon 2 won the Golden Globe, so for whatever that's worth.
I think that's going to win, actually.
Yeah.
I think there is a sizzle about DreamWorks Animation right now. And I think they're doing good work. So I think Big Hero has a pretty good chance. I think some of the smaller ones have a good chance, too. I think it's a really wide-open race.
Why was the Lego movie totally ignored, though? Because that was a great—I mean, even just the story was wonderful, and it was just so clever, but just visually what they did.
It's almost like it got penalized for being so popular, which used to happen in the documentary race a lot. A documentary that just was universally adored and had a high profile would not get nominated.
And I wonder if some people were somehow queasy about a, 90-minute commercial for Legos. But what do you think every Disney movie is?
Right.
You know, their excuse is to sell you princess costumes.
Just let it go, Stephen.
Yeah, I'll try. Good advice.
Okay, so we were getting ready to talk about all these important films. And, Stephen, you mentioned that all three of you last night were at a simultaneous screening for Hot Tub Time Machine.
Probably leading the pack for next year's Oscar race.
Incredible
for sure.
Work. Acting. It's fantastic. I'm kidding.
It was mercifully 93 minutes long.
You were yawning the whole time. You were like flipping around in your chair trying to stay awake.
Yeah, you look dismayed.
To be fair, I get that way in a lot of movies.
What about, so everyone is talking about 50 Shades of Grey. Have you all seen it?
Oh, yes.
Yes. I think we were all in the same theater together.
We were.
Awkwardly.
It was so awesome.
Had anyone read the book?
Yes.
Books. Okay.
Yes.
It's funny to even ask this, but does the movie compare favorably to the
books? I think it does. I think if you've read the books, if you care about the characters already, then you will enjoy seeing them fleshed out on screen. And it's not as sexy as the books were, obviously. I think that would be impossible.
With an R rating.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, if you have not read the books, I didn't enjoy the books. I'm sorry I didn't.
But you read all of them?
No, I did not read all of them.
On Kindle.
Yes, because if you have the book, I do all my reading at the gym, so I could not have that on the elliptical. Anyhow, but I think if you care about the characters already, you won't hate it. Otherwise, don't even bother. You will be in misery.
I actually enjoyed the first 30 or 40 minutes of it, and part of that is because even not having read the books, you can't not know what the story is about.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's some nice little foreshadowing as these two people are kind of doing this little delicate dance, figuring out what we're really talking about here. That part was kind of fun. Mm-hmm. And then once it gets into the throes of what the story's really about, God, it just got so boring and felt so long.
You wouldn't think once they got in the red room that that's when it would get lame. But
oddly
it
enough.
Is.
Yeah.
I thought it ran out of story after about 40 minutes. And yeah, I agree. I kind of enjoyed the early, it was almost like a rom-com for the first sequence. And then the sex started and it got kind of boring.
Yeah, and that's sad.
Yes.
I respect both of you guys for going to see it, though. I was happy to see them in the theater.
I had to.
Yeah.
All right, well, here's the best segue ever. We have an email from Margaret who asks that you talk about the best documentary feature.
I have not seen all of them, but I really liked Citizen Four.
What's that about?
It's about Snowden, Edward Snowden.
Oh, and, sure. I've heard about that film.
The whole process of him giving his story. Basically, it's him in a hotel room. That's not all it is, but it just felt very immediate and now. But I should say that this is a Dallasite's best chance to get an Oscar because Kevin McAllister, former radio personality in Dallas, was a producer and co-writer for Last Days in Vietnam, which is also a very good film. So that's Dallas's best shot.
He also did You're Gonna Miss Me before
that. The Rocky Erickson film, which was fantastic. So I'm a big fan of Kevin's work, and I would love to see him up there on the stage, especially because he's totally nervous about it.
Full disclosure, my sister was actually a producer on that film.
Oh, well.
Really?
Yes.
Excellent.
So we should all be rooting for that one.
Well, no, she was a producer on You're Gonna Miss Me.
Okay.
So.
Oh, and okay.
Also,
it's time has come and gone.
Last Days of Vietnam, I believe, will be airing on KERA-TV in the spring.
American Experience in April.
Okay, so that's something I feel like I should know. I think that Citizen Four is going to win because I think people – well, A, it's the one title of the five nominated that people might be able to even pick out of a lineup. But also I think the people who voted on it and look at those documentaries, I think they're going to have a real appreciation for how that film was made. In a way, the filmmakers – it's one of those ones where they had to be part of the story. I mean, Snowden basically called them and said, let's talk about this. And between that and with the NSA – and spying and all of that sort of being in the ether, I just think it's kind of a no-brainer. It's the topic of the moment.
You sort of feel like you're watching history being made as you're watching film, and that's a really rare sensation for documentary.
You guys have another category that you follow that not everybody follows? I don't know, costume design or best song, that sort of thing?
I did poorly in foreign language film. I mean, I saw a lot of foreign language films, but my two favorite were not nominated. I believe Ida is how it's pronounced, is the favorite to win, but I liked Force Majeure and Winter Sleep a lot. But they weren't nominated. Leviathan was also very good, the Russian
nominee. That was nominated, right?
Yes, it was.
I think Ida probably will win. Normally, if you're just looking at a slate of foreign films and you've not seen anyone, pick the one that's got some World War II tie-in, and you're normally in pretty good shape. So I'll put my money behind that one.
I usually follow Best Song very closely, but that might just be because of Frozen last year.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry, that was one of my favorite movies, and I could listen to Let It Go until I fall over dead. But
you have a 9-year-old daughter?
I have a 7-year-old and a 10-year-old. Mm-hmm. So, yes, we'll sing it in the car just for kicks.
I think that will be Selma's win for Gloria.
Probably,
it's called,
yeah.
I think so, too.
For Best Song. I want to say really quick, too. I think this is a year where something really weird could happen for Best Picture because I don't think any of these films are absolutely beloved. Mm. And that creates a situation where something could sneak in and win Best Picture. And that's always kind of exciting. I think something could be the Chariots of Fire, for instance, of 2015.
You know, I would say that too, except for that Birdman has already won. If it had been kind of split among a few, I could see that. But I think since Birdman's won these major ones and there's so much overlap with the voters, I feel like that's a fait accompli.
Stephen Becker is the one of the hosts of the Big Screen radio segment that is on KERA on Thursdays. Chris Wagner is the other host of that, and he's culture critic for the Dallas Morning News. And Julie Fisk is a member of the Dallas-Fort Worth Film Critics Association. It's been wonderful to have you all here. Thank you so
much.
Thank you. Thanks, Chris.
Think is produced by Stephen Becker and engineered by Shelley Canavy. Lindsay Connect is associate producer with help on the phone today from Kristen Taylor. Our executive producer is Jeff Whittington. You can find me on Twitter at Chris Boyd Think. Email the show at think@kera.org. Once again, I'm Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening and have a great day.